103.9 WVOM. Now let's get back to business.
Welcome back, everybody, or maybe I should say welcome aboard a very special edition of Back to Business, a day in the life of a Down East Maine lobster fisherman, featuring Richard Pinkham, our lobster fisherman, Dennis Pinkham, his son, 10-year-old Dennis, and or 12-year-old Dennis, excuse me, and Corey Falabella, who is our stern man aboard the boat. And in studio with me, I have Kathy Billings with the Lobster Institute at the University of Maine. And later on in the hour, we will be speaking with UMaine professor James Atchison, who has published several books about the lobster industry. We've got Johnny Shields in Command and Control, and if I'm really nice to him, Johnny will take us out fishing. Let's go. So, Corey, you told me earlier that you're 18.
Yep.
Where'd you grow up?
Stew Bend.
Where'd you go to school?
Ella Lewis.
Are you done? Have you graduated?
Yeah, I graduated last year.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yep.
So what's your plan?
I plan on lobster fishing until, I guess, they die out.
Are you concerned about that?
No, not too bad.
Well, it seems you guys do a really good job of trying to protect it, don't you?
Yeah, we do. We don't like taking, well, we don't take short ones, V-notch ones. Some people do. It ain't right.
Now, you show me you have your own traps and your own boat. How often do you go out on your own?
I usually go out after haul, or if I have a day off, I'll go out.
How many traps do you have out there right now?
I have around 200.
Wow, so you're working for Richard, stern man, and then you're hauling your own traps too?
Yep, and I have another 200 that are going in probably sometime this week.
You're hard working, aren't you?
Yep, it is.
But your whole family does it.
Yeah, I've grown up in it and get used to it after a while.
It's a nice day to be out here today, doesn't it make it easier?
It does. A lot better than fog or rain.
Yeah. What advice would you give to somebody, a young person who might be thinking about going into this business?
I'd probably tell them to think about it, because it's been around for quite a while, and it might not last until they get old, I guess.
What would it be like for somebody coming into this bay, for example, brand new person, dropping some traps? Is that a good idea?
It depends if they live here. If they don't, probably not.
So it is really one big family, and everybody knows each other, and you kind of have to be part of it to really, really make it work. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Pretty much. We're all related in somehow. Some way we're all connected, either friends or family.
So there's a lot of support for everybody, but maybe not so much for an outsider trying to come in.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's our stern man, 18-year-old Corey Falabella. I have never met an 18-year-old who works as hard as Corey, hauling traps all day on Richard's boat as stern man, and then at the end of the day, he was going back out to haul his own traps. Again, you're listening to a special edition of Back to Business on The Voice of Maine. I'm your host, Deb Newman. Let's get back out there. Okay, it's 10 o'clock. What are we doing? Are we taking a break right now, Richard?
Yep. Time to get something to eat.
I mean, we've been going since 4 a.m. It's already been a long day.
Yeah, lunch was probably an hour ago for us.
So what does somebody do if they need to go to the bathroom out here?
Well, you have to improvise. It's not the best.
Corey holds up the bucket.
It's not the best bathroom facilities out here. So.
You just go overboard? Is that what you do?
Pretty much, yep. You do what you have to do.
Yep. Or you hold it.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay, good to know. So 10 o'clock, what do you think we're going to be out here till about 2, Richard?
Somewhere around 2, yeah. Sometimes you can't tell, you know. It's all what your ambition starts to go downhill fast after noontime.
And so Richard Pinkham, the captain of our boat, the Jennifer Diane, and we were lobster fishing. And I've got to tell you, by the time it got to be about 10 o'clock in the morning, I had more than my share of a full day, but was certainly fortunate to be out there. But these guys just keep going and keep going and keep going. So let's check back in. It's about 10:30. We have been out here since 4 a.m. I can't believe it's only 10:30 in the morning. It feels like it should be about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's been an amazing day so far. We really lucked out. The weather is perfect. Blue sky, calm seas. I'm sitting on the stern of the boat right now, and there was just a seal pup playing in the wake from the boat. Lobster pots everywhere. Boats everywhere. I'll have to check in with
Richard and the stern man Corey in a moment and see how we're doing for our catch. So far, I gather it's not great. And what I'm hearing on the radio is that it's not great for anybody out here today. Richard thinks that the lobsters are taking a summer vacation. But we keep going, one trap at a time. He thinks we'll probably be out here until about 2 o'clock. Can you tell me how many traps you think we've pulled and how many lobsters we've caught?
Hauled about close to 300 and haven't caught too many, about close to 200 pounds.
You say 100 pounds?
200 pounds.
200 pounds. Is that less than usual, about the same, or?
Way less.
What's a good day, or what's a typical day?
I can't reveal that information.
Fair enough. So we've got about 200 pounds in the tank. Now, what about another 100 traps to pull yet, to haul out?
Probably another 100 or so.
Corey Falabella, our stern man aboard the Jennifer Diane. This is your host, Deb Newman. And I did the math, which is not easy for me to do, and I figured it out. They hauled about 50 traps an hour, and it was amazing how quickly they brought those traps up on the side of the boat, emptied them, rebaited them, and sent them back out. And one of my concerns was the rope attached to this trap and how quickly that rope flew off the back of the boat. So I did ask Richard about safety on board. Let's hear it.
So Richard, do you ever worry about going overboard?
No.
Do you know how to swim?
Yes. Yes, I do. Now, you always keep your eye on the rope. You always, might not look like we don't know, but I always got my eye on the rope.
Yeah. No, it looks like you know exactly what you're doing, but boy, when that trap heads back out there, that rope moves really fast. I was worried about getting tangled up in it.
Yeah, no, you always keep your eye on the rope. Accidents do happen, but you just something that you do, it comes automatic. Might look like we're out here having fun joking around stuff, but you always keep your eye on the rope.
Is that the biggest danger on board, do you think?
That and sinking.
It's sinking, yeah.
But yeah, well, you know, life jackets aboard the boat, that's no problem, they're up in the bow, but you're awful hard to work with a life jacket on.
Yeah, it's not required.
Not to wear it, no, but it is required to have them aboard your boat.
Richard Pinkham, captain of the Jennifer Diane. You're listening to a special edition of Back to Business, a day in the life of a Down East Maine lobster fisherman. Let's take a break, and when we get back, more fishing.
103.9 WVOM.
At Machias Savings Bank, we take the time to get to know you and your financial needs because we want your business to succeed. Whether you're looking to purchase additional lobster traps or opening a new retail location, we have experienced people ready to work with you. Call or stop by one of our 11 branch locations today and experience exceptional customer service. We look forward to serving you. We're Machias Savings Bank. Experienced people, exceptional service. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Introducing Hoola, the latest e-commerce solution from Sephany. Hoola is an online shopping system for your business's website that's easier than ever for you to manage and easier than ever for your customers to use.
There's a handy little program you should get that'll help you do more business on the internet. To learn a little more about it, just log on to Sephany.com.
Clear Channel wants you to know that the University of Maine is helping to build Maine's economy one business at a time.
My company is called RE Consulting. We provide the tools and information that forestry businesses need to make knowledgeable decisions to improve their bottom lines. The idea of starting a business from the ground up can be overwhelming, but UMaine's Innovation Center helps student entrepreneurs navigate all the challenges that new businesses face. But I couldn't imagine doing it without all the support I've received from the Innovation Center.
RE Consulting is in business because of the University of Maine. Clear Channel wants you to know that the University of Maine is helping to build Maine's economy one business at a time.
My company is called Knife Edge Productions. We are a film and video production company that combines our artistic and innovative vision with the latest video technology. Our work ranges from promotional films to music videos. I grew up in Cherryfield, and like many young people left the state, the University of Maine gave me the opportunity to come back to Maine, further my education, and start my own business.
Knife Edge Productions is in business because of the University of Maine.
Visit WVOMFM.com. It's Maine in the Morning.
Should Maine create a drug dealer registry? like the sex offender registry.
State Senator Bill Diamond.
Maybe they should have the harsher penalty, and it is harsh, that they're then marked and they're on a list.
Shannon Bellows from the Maine Civil Liberties Union.
Your suggestion that this could become a yellow pages for drug dealers is one that we should take seriously.
Michael Cantara, Commissioner of Public Safety.
I think it would be important to know what the data suggests in other states.
It's Maine in the Morning on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network. 1039 WVOM with Fox News every hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Local news every 20 minutes during Maine in the Morning. Your source for national news and comprehensive local news is 1039 WVOM, the Voice of Maine.
This is Eastern Maine by Design.
The Graham Building on Harlow Street in Bangor was built in 1911 for John R. Graham, president of the Bangor Street Railway and Electric Company. Graham's company would become Bangor Hydro in 1924. The building was designed by Wilfred Mansour, Eastern Maine's most prolific architect. Two of Mansour's Bangor buildings are on the National Register of Historic Places, Firehouse No. 6 on Center Street and the Hose House 5 Fire Museum on State Street. When the Graham Building was completed, it was one of the first in Bangor to be completely electrified. This included 1,500 electric lights surrounding the cornice of the building, which provided illumination equivalent to 10,000 candles. These lights helped make the Graham Building a bright part of Eastern Maine's rich architectural heritage.
Eastern Maine by Design is made possible by Redmond & Winchell, Counselors at Law. Generations of counsel to Maine people, businesses, and communities. On the web at redmondwinchell.com.
You tell me what you want me to do. That means it's time for our Back to Business Tip of the Hour. And our Tip of the Hour is sponsored by J Group Advertising. Get a strategy, get business. It's that simple. Call them at 990-3879 or go to jgroupadvertising.com. Today on Back to Business, we're going fishing. We're lobster fishing with Richard Pinkham out of Steubenville, Maine. And joining me in the studio is Kathy Billings with the Lobster Institute. And I've asked Kathy for our Tip of the Hour to provide us with some lobster trivia. So let's see what we can learn about lobster today that maybe you didn't know before. Go ahead, Kathy.
All right, Deb, we're going to talk a little lobster biology right now. One of the things that some people may not realize is lobsters do have teeth, but unlike us, these teeth, they don't have a mouth per se. These teeth are found in the lobster's stomach, actually called the gastric mill. It helps grind up the food right in their stomachs.
Interesting.
And also, we've talked a lot about lobsters carrying eggs.
Right.
And those are called buried lobsters because the eggs are small, round, black, almost like the pit of a berry. And they carry those eggs inside for 9 months, but then they carry them outside on their tails for about another 9 months.
Huh.
So this is how the lobsterman can see that it's an egg-bearing female lobster there, right on the outside of the tail.
I didn't realize that they started inside the lobster for 9 months and then they moved outside of the lobster. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Perfect.
See what you're learning today on Back to Business. Give us a third one, Kathy Billings.
Well, lots of people consider lobsters to be scavengers, but in fact, they're rather particular. My boss at the Institute, Dr. Baer, actually prefers to call them opportunists.
Hmm.
They'll obviously go for the fresh food more than they will for a rotten fish or something like that. So they're not truly the scavengers that people think they are.
Very interesting. And again, that's Kathy Billings with the Lobster Institute at the University of Maine sharing some bet you didn't know information about lobsters here on our special lobster fishing edition of Back to Business. And our tip of the hour is sponsored by J Group Advertising. Call them at 990-3879. Johnny Shields in command and control. Let's get back out there.
I also want to ask you about the buoys. I noticed that they're all styrofoam. Anybody using wood anymore?
No, that's pretty much a thing of the past. Everybody now is strictly styrofoam, no wooden buoys, nothing like that. That's hide on the propeller on the boat. Somebody gets wound up, it could do some damage, cause somebody to lose some time off.
Plus, I would imagine the styrofoam's a lot less maintenance than the wooden buoys.
Yeah.
And cheaper?
I don't know. The styrofoam's pretty expensive. Average. $3-4 a piece, and that's just for the buoy. That's not counting spindles and breakaways that you have to have. And
do you paint them yourself?
Yeah, every year you paint your buoys. Yep.
Very interesting. I really didn't realize that there weren't any more wooden buoys out there, Kathy, with the Lobster Institute. And if you find one, that's a real treasure these days. If you find one
antique
along the shore, absolutely,
just like the wooden trap.
Very interesting. And again, they still paint their buoys, and each fisherman has his own color.
Yes.
To identify that those buoys belong to him or her.
Right, and those colors do have to be licensed with the state as well, so that everyone knows that they're fishing the right traps, including the Marine Patrol officers.
That's right. So let's get back out there and see how we're doing.
Richard's talking to a boat by the name of Taylor Nicole, and his son Dennis is the stern man on it. Richard's talking to the captain, asking him if he's having a good day fishing, and captain shaking his head, nope, not a good day out here for anybody. And there's Dennis on board, who we spoke with earlier, 12-year-old Dennis. He's got his full gear on, baiting a trap. So Richard, what are you doing?
I am cleaning the boat up and going in and sell.
We're done?
We are officially done. Yep.
All right, I haven't forgot. I stay away.
See, what time is it? Let's get a time check on this.
12:16.
Yep, 12:16. Richard's decided we're done fishing.
Well, I'll just go through everyone.
We're cleaning the boat. 12:16, and you know, we had been out there since 4 a.m., so it was a full day. Not a great day fishing-wise, as you heard Richard state, but a beautiful day weather-wise, so we really lucked out. But by 12:30, Richard was done, and we head back to the docks. And now it gets very interesting, because I was very interested to see what happens when we bring the boat in, and that's what we're going to find out next.
We have just spent the day lobster fishing with Richard Pinkham and his stern man, Corey. We left the shore at 4 a.m. this morning. We are now returning to the dock. It is 12:30. Okay, so Corey, we're heading back to the dock. What are you doing with the lobsters?
Counting them in the crates.
So he's transferring them from the tank in the center of the boat to crates, and he's counting them out. They're all feisty, moving. They all have blue bands, elastic bands around their claws, keep them from hurting each other and from hurting us. In a moment, we'll get the final count. It's interesting looking at these lobsters. They really vary a lot in terms of color. Some are dark green. Others are more of a blue, bluish tint. Others are more orange, yellow. Of course, as Richard said earlier, they all look the same after they're cooked. Bright red. Okay, so we're right by the dock right now. They're counting the lobsters into the crate, taking them out of the tank, and counting them into the crate. Tell me what we're just doing here.
We're weighing up our lobsters right now and getting bait and fuel.
We just got a couple of buckets of herring delivered on board. Bait. A couple of guys here in this boathouse at the end of the pier. And the big crate of lobsters that we just counted is now on a scale. There's a woman taking them out one at a time, transferring them into another bucket. Two more buckets of herring have arrived on deck. And Corey is throwing the herring into the bait bucket. It's pretty stinky, but the lobsters like it, so hey. Now there's a guy coming down the dock, ready to put fuel into the boat. This is quite a slick operation. Everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to be doing. It's just second nature. We're standing on the docks. Richard just left his catch here, and I'm standing with
Emmy.
Emmy, hi Emmy. So tell me what you do.
I buy the lobsters from the fishermen, sell them the bait, fuel them up, give them their bands, whatever they need.
So Richard, you weighed his catch and gave him some bait, fueled his boat. Now he's heading out to put it out on the mooring, I presume. You've got another boat coming in. So you tell him right away how much they brought in?
Yeah, just as soon as we weigh them up, throw them on the scales, put it on the slip. Hand it to them, they know what they've made.
All right. Well, thanks, Emmy. I'll let you get to work.
All righty. Thank you.
I'm sitting here on the docks waiting for Richard to come back in. He's taking his boat out to the mooring. One boat after another keeps pulling in with their catch of the day. Seems to be that time of day when everybody's coming in. Interestingly enough, Taylor and Nicole just docked, and there's Richard's 12-year-old son, Dennis, who we met earlier. So let's watch and listen to what's going on. They're unloading their catch into crates. These are crates that go into the water. If you've ever been to a lobster pound, you've seen them strung together in the water to keep the lobster alive. While they're unloading their catch, there's a gentleman here who's delivering bucket after bucket after bucket of herring. I am sitting here staring at 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, 24, 28, 32 full buckets of herring. The breakfast of champions. Now Dennis is loading the herring on the boat that Taylor Nicole. It's a hardworking 12-year-old right there. More buckets of herring are being delivered. More lobsters coming off the boat at the same time. And Emmy is taking the lobster from the boat and weighing it on a scale. Count up their catch of the day. And let's check in with 12-year-old Dennis. Again, he is Richard's son. He was stern man on another boat, and find out how his day fishing went. sitting on the docks and have run into Dennis Pinkham, who's Richard's son. Dennis is 12 years old, right, Dennis?
Yep.
And you left this morning. When we left, you went out on the Taylor Nicole as a stern man. Tell me how your day went.
It was hard and rough, kind of icky and wet, and kind of had a hard time walking around.
On the boat, kind of slippery?
Yeah, and plus offshore a little ways, it's kind of wavy.
So how did you think the catch was today?
Not very well, because there's not many lobsters out yet. Should have just started.
The season just started?
Yeah.
When does it get really busy? When is the catch the best?
2 or 3 more weeks, I'm guessing.
2 or 3 more weeks. So you guys have just unloaded your lobster. Do you know right now how much money you made today?
No, not at all.
When do you find that out?
The captain doesn't tell the steerman. He just looks at his slip and sees how much. And then he just pays us.
Oh, that's okay. Have you been stern man for your father on Richard's boat?
Yeah, I was stern man since I was 5 for him.
And you want to keep doing this?
Yeah.
Even days like this when it's kind of rough out there and the catch isn't so great?
Yeah.
If you have kids someday, would you like them to be lobster fishermen too?
Yeah, I'd like them to take after me and learn how to be smart and all skillful.
And you learned from your dad?
Yeah.
And others out here. A lot of good people out here, aren't there?
Yeah, they're nice, kind. They help you out when you need help. When you need to be towed, they help you tow.
How young or how old do you have to be, Dennis, to be a stern man on a lobster boat?
You can be any age.
Really? So you can start learning this very, very early?
Yeah.
What advice would you give to a young person who might be interested in doing something like this?
Pay attention when they set their traps and be careful in the water.
Be safe out there?
Yeah, because that's the number one priority, because you can get hurt real easy out there.
That's Dennis Pinkham, 12-year-old son of Richard Pinkham, who spent the day fishing on another vessel on the waters of Steuben, Maine. You're listening to a very special edition of Back to Business, a day in the life of a Down East Maine lobster fisherman. We've just come in from fishing, and we're counting our catch and wrapping up the day. It's 12:30 in the afternoon. We've been out there since 4 a.m. Joining us in a moment, we'll be speaking with UMaine Professor James Acheson about the lobster industry, and also Kathy Billings with the Lobster Institute at UMaine continues to join us in the studio. And we'll wrap up our day in the life with Richard Pinkham. You're listening to Back to Business. I'm your host, Deb Newman. Stick around.
...1039 WVOM.
Sunday, August 6th, only on ABC Family. 3 moons.
The world is ending and we don't have time for chit-chat.
One town.
There's a mammoth explosion, nuclear winter.
That might not be for years.
And a whole lot of crazy.
You burned down their school doing witchcraft.
We are Methodists.
Relax. It's only the end of the world.
You have to invite me.
The new original series, 3 Moons Over Milford, premieres Sunday, August 6th at 8, 7 Central, only on ABC Family.
Hi, this is Dave Sleeper, owner of Realty of Maine. There are a lot of real estate agents out there selling houses, but not our more than 100 agents. They're selling homes. What's the difference? A home is a place that's just what you want, where you want to be. Our agents in Bangor, Belfast, Ellsworth, Cherryfield, South China, Brownville, and now Newport work to find you something more than 4 walls and a roof. Look us up online at realtyofmaine.com.
Take pleasure in the last month of summer on brand new outdoor furniture from EBS. The August Flyer from EBS has all wicker furniture at 30% off. Enjoy your outdoors even more with a complete set, including wicker rockers, coffee tables, settees, and chairs in white, seagrass, or black. Prices start at under $100 for a wicker chair. EBS has also slashed 30% off all World Zone wooden furniture, including gliders and table sets. Save now on outdoor furniture and enjoy for years and years. Remember, EBS delivers everything and anything for free. EBS can do. Just ask.
When you have too much at home, you hold a yard sale and blow the extra stuff out. Well, Morrison Chevrolet in Ellsworth has the same problem. Used car sales manager Dave Keep has been given the green light to clean out the used vehicle inventory. With all the new car specials going on, many people have traded for new, leaving Morrison's with too many used cars, trucks, and SUVs, both domestic and foreign. Here are some details. A 1999 four-cylinder Toyota Camry with power windows, locks, and driver's seat, plus air conditioning, cruise control, and more, just $7,895. A 2003 Chevy Malibu with low miles and and CD stereo, AC, tilt, cruise, and more, just $8,995. Morrison's just took in an 03 Chevy Venture van that includes a third rear seat, luggage rack, AC, tinted windows, dual front airbags, and power locks for the low price of $11,995. They also have dropped the prices on 05 Buick LeSabre, Chevy 4x4 Trailblazers, and others. Morrison Chevrolet, Route 1 North, Ellsworth, putting down East Main behind the wheel since 1930.
Forecast for your Saturday, mostly sunny, upper 70s, lower 80s with a northwest breeze. Then for tonight, clear to partly cloudy, 50s will do it for the low. Your Sunday, becoming partly sunny, southwesterly breezes will develop, 70s, lower 80s. Monday, more in the way of cloud cover, risk of a scattered shower, thundershower. I'm News Center 2 meteorologist Steve McKay for WVOM.
The Winter Harbor Agency on Route 186 in Goldsboro. Visit them online at winterharboragency.com.
It's 76 in Bangor.
A colorful event you will definitely want to experience is coming this Saturday, May 27th, Memorial Day weekend. It's the Spring Bulb Tour at the W.P. Stewart Estate in Northeast Harbor. This incredible horticultural display will take your breath away. Tickets are only $10 and all proceeds benefit the Mount Desert Nursing Association, which provides ongoing in-home nursing care to local residents. For tickets and more information, call 276-5184.
103.9 WVOM. Now, let's get back to business.
That would be Mr. Jimmy Barnes of Down East Main. Thank you, Johnny Shields and Command and Control, for pulling up all this great music today as we celebrate the day in the life of a Down East Main lobster fisherman. And our fisherman who we've been joining today is Richard Pinkham out of Steuben, Maine. And right now, I'm pleased to introduce to the program University of Maine Professor James Acheson. He is with the Department of Anthropology and the School of Marine Sciences, and he has authored several books on this industry. One, which is a fascinating read, it's called The Lobster Gangs of Maine, and another one that I've been reading called Capturing the Commons, which is about devising institutions to manage the Maine lobster industry. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Hi, thank you, Deb.
Well, it's wonderful. It's great that you could join us today. Your books are fascinating. Your research is fascinating. What I've been impressed with throughout this whole the day fishing and my discussions with Richard and others out there is this idea of sort of co-management of this industry and how the fishermen have really been very proactive at protecting the industry and self-regulating themselves. And then certainly there are regulations that the state imposes might not be the correct word, but talk to me about that co-management model and how they all work together.
Yeah, okay. Well, for reasons that are interesting in and of themselves, the Maine legislature, passed a co-management law in 1995. And it was a very, very far-reaching law, the most far-reaching law that we've ever had in the industry. It called for the imposition of a statewide 1,200 trap limit. Now, that isn't any trap limit at all as far as most everybody in the industry was concerned. They wanted far less. Number two, it imposed an apprenticeship program, so you have to work on a boat for 200 days before you get a license. Then it imposed a trap tag system. So you had to buy a small aluminum tag with a number which identified you, and that has to be on every trap. Then it had a license moratorium. No more licenses were going to be given out. This had a cap. Fourth and most important was the co-management system. What we did was divide the state up into ultimately seven zones. It started out as five zones. It went to seven. And each one of those zones was under an elected zone council. And the zone councils were allowed to recommend laws on four things. One, the number of lobster traps that were going to be fished, so that if they wanted to have under 1,200, 600 or 800 or 200, they could. Number two, the time of day when lobstering would be allowed. Number three, the number of lobster traps allowed on a line, whether you're going to fish singles or, doubles or
trawls, 8, 9, you know, 20 traps on a line. And then fourth, you had a limited entry, you know, law two, which, you know, specified an in-out ratio. And if the rules were passed by a two-thirds vote, then this would become part of the Department of Marine Resources regulations and be enforced by the wardens. So you could impose those rules. What has happened here is that every single one of the seven zones has imposed a trap limit far underneath the state, you know, mandated 1,200 trap limit. Most of them have 800 trap limits. One of them has you know, 600 trap limits. Five out of the seven have imposed a limited entry system on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand that those are rules which were, you know, suggested by and, you know, where we had a vote of the industry itself. And they're working extremely well. And you're absolutely right that these people have been imposing some quite stringent rules on themselves. If every industry in the world, every, you know, marine industry in the world were like the lobster industry, I don't think you'd have any problem with overfishing.
Right, right. Very interesting. Now, let's talk about your term, lobster gang. What do you mean by that?
That's a kind of unfortunate term. And in some ways, I'm extremely sorry that I used it. But had to use something. What it really does is refer to a group of men who go lobstering out of a single harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in the industry have words for it. Sometimes they talk about the Monhegan Boys or the Friendship Group or the New Harbor Gang, for example. And I just use the term, you know, lobster gang. And it's one that some of them use themselves. And it's an innocent term here on the coast of Maine. Gang means group. We talk about, for example, somebody having a gang of traps.
You know, right.
He fished a small gang of traps. He fished a large gang of traps. There was an awful gang of boats in that harbor. So that's really all it means. Unfortunately, in the rest of the country, gang oftentimes means criminal conspiracy.
Mm.
And that's the way, in fact, the term has been, you know, kind of interpreted. That isn't what's meant. It isn't what's meant on the coast of Maine. It isn't, you know, what I meant. But unfortunately, that is the interpretation. I don't think I'd use it again.
Very interesting. And, you know, I did find I was really struck by the camaraderie out there and the familial environment and aspect of the industry and the folks I was fishing with. It was great. Let me ask you, again, we're talking with James Acheson, who is a professor at the University of Maine and the author of several books on this topic. You are clearly an expert in this industry. What do you see are the challenges facing the future of the lobster industry?
Well, I think there are probably two challenges. One is the right whale problem. You're up against the Endangered Species Act here, and the Endangered Species Act was passed by the federal government, phrased in very, very extreme language. You will not damage or harm or endanger in any way one of these animals.
Mm.
And there isn't any idea of, you know, costs and benefits here at all. You just will not endanger one. So if a whale happens to be killed by being entangled with lobster gear, this can bring about a suit, and the suit can have some very, very serious consequences. Now, we tried to get some ways to solve this problem. The primary way is to get breakaway gear, so that if a whale becomes entangled with lobster gear after a while, very short while, the lobster traps are going to break away. Whether that will work or not, or whether we're headed for more problems with the right whale issue, I'm not sure. I suspect before it's over, we're going to get into more problems. The second very, very serious problem is what's known as shell disease. And you have something. It's a virus, as I understand it, which is attacking the shells and makes the lobsters very, very unattractive. I'm not certain about the mortality on the lobster yet. There's an argument about that. But anyway, those are the two kinds of problems. And the shell disease issue, I don't see as we've got an easy answer to.
Hmm.
It's open ocean. God only knows what is the ultimate cause of this. We have an awful lot of shell disease, for example, further south in Long Island Sound off of the state of Rhode Island area. It's possible that it's due to warmer waters. That's been, suggested. If global warming hits full blast, and we may be seeing it right now, you're going to have an ocean that's a little warmer, possibly the spread of a disease that really has, seriously harmed the industry in southern New England. It could also be to due to certain kinds of water pollution, too. We're not certain. And I see those as the most serious problems. I don't know how you could possibly solve the shell disease problem. The only thing I can think of is that when a lobsterman hauls up an animal that has shell disease, he brings her in, and they're sold.
Right.
Or cooked.
Interesting.
And whether that would actually help out, reduce the incidence of the spread of shell disease, I don't know.
Interesting.
But those are the problems I see right now.
Well, I want
2 years from now, there'll be other problems.
Right. And that's why we have organizations such as the Lobster Institute who are continuing to do research in this industry and keep it vibrant and alive. Thank you so much for joining us.
You are very welcome.
That's Professor James Acheson from the University of Maine. And I would really encourage you, if you're interested in this industry or in this subject at all, his books are fascinating. One is The Lobster Gangs of Maine, which he spoke of. And the other one that just came out is called Capturing the Commons, that talks about devising institutions to manage the Maine lobster industry. And there's some great information in there about the zones and the territories and regulations. So check those out. We're going to take a break on Back to Business. And when we get back, we're going to get back with Richard and find out how he felt about the day fishing. Stick around.
103.9 WVOM.
Clear Channel wants you to know that the University of Maine is helping to build Maine's economy one business at a time.
My business is called Version Zero. We help companies develop their brand by creating cutting-edge websites and promotional materials. I started my company after an internship designing a website and brochures for UMaine's Target Technology Incubator. This experience inspired me to become an entrepreneur. What I love about my work is that I can have clients in New York, work in Maine, and still hit the slopes whenever I want.
Version Zero is in business because of the University of Maine. Clear Channel wants you to know that the University of Maine is helping to build Maine's economy one business at a time.
My business is called Orinoco Spectral Solutions. We are developing a portable system that detects chemical and biological agents in liquids to help protect our nation's security and our water supply. Our technology is based on UMaine research. I'm excited about having a business in Maine because I grew up in the county, and now my young daughters will have the opportunity to grow up in Maine, too.
Orinoco Spectral Solutions is in business because of the University of Maine.
Looking for a bank that can meet all your business needs? Then look no further. At Machaya Savings Bank, we offer a wide variety of business deposit accounts that can make banking easier. Our experienced personnel strive to know you and your unique business needs. Call or stop by one of our 11 branch locations today and experience exceptional customer service. We look forward to serving you. We're Machaya Savings Bank. Experienced people, exceptional service. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Renee Overlock of the National Association of Letter Carriers. When you, the listeners of WVOM, were asked to help during our recent food drive, you pulled together to help us feed our hungry neighbors. The listeners of WVOM have donated over 49,000 tons of food to help refill food pantries all over our delivery area. Special thanks to the letter carriers and volunteers. Only by pulling together for one another can we make life here in Eastern Maine the way it should be.
Daddy, what is big oil?
To a five-year-old.
Daddy, why are there tornadoes?
Today's world can be hard to understand.
Something happening here.
When will there be peace?
through understanding comes the ability to explain.
Daddy, what is sex education?
We better stop.
Daddy?
103.9 WVOM.
This is Eastern Maine by Design.
The Thomas Hill Standpipe, built in 1897 and located on Bangor land once owned by brothers James and Charles Thomas, consists of a 1¾ million gallon water tank. Protecting the steel tank is an 11-story shell constructed with 42,000 feet of hard pine trees and 220,000 cedar shingles. Built in just 6 months by 22 workers, the purpose of the standpipe was to provide sufficient water pressure to the city. The shell is capped by an observation deck, providing stunning views stretching from the Camden Hills to Mount Katahdin. At night, the standpipe's lights have been described as the diamonds in the crown of the Queen City. Still in use today, the standpipe is a National Historic Landmark and part of Eastern Maine's rich architectural heritage.
Eastern Maine by Design is made possible by Redmond & Winchell, Counselors at Law. Generations of counsel to Maine people, businesses, and communities. On the web at redmondwinchell.com.
103.9 WVOM. The voice of Maine. 103.9 WVOM. We're back, and we're taking care of business.
I'm sailing away. You're listening to a special edition of Back to Business, a day in the life of a Down East Maine lobster fisherman. Let's get back to Richard Pinkham.
Okay, we're right back where we started from. It is now about 1:15. We're in Richard's truck. Richard's having a smoke. We're chilling out. We've been going since I got up. What time did you get up, Richard? I got up at 3 o'clock this morning.
I get up at 1:15.
Oh, so you got 15 more minutes of sleep than I did.
Yeah, that 15 minutes is, that's a lot.
But we've been out on the water since 4 a.m., put in a full day. How many traps did you end up hauling altogether?
Between 350 and 400.
And what was your final catch?
It was poor, real poor.
Not a good day?
No, not what I was expecting, no.
Now, Dennis just informed me that the season, things ought to be improving over the next few weeks. Is that correct?
Yeah, they should be. They should be improving.
You've been at this again how many years?
Roughly 20 or so. Of course, I started out sternman. I did a lot of sternman jobs myself. I've sternman for quite a few different people, so it's, you know, pretty much since you're a teenager. Easy.
Just like Corey and just like Dennis, right?
Yep, started out the same way.
How do you feel about your son being in the business?
I love it, you know. But, you know, he still got schooling to go through, and you don't know what changes, you know. If he wants to further his education, I'm all for it. And if he wants to move on, do something different, I'm all for it. And if he wants to be a fisherman, I'm all for it too. But got to stand behind him no matter what he wants to do.
That's a great approach. Let me ask you your thoughts on the lobster fishing industry in Maine. And if policymakers are listening to this program, what are your thoughts about the industry?
Well, I think they're doing an all right job right now. Sometimes you get frustrated. You think there's too many laws that they've got on the books. But sometimes you get that sense that they're going too far with it too. And sometimes when you add to something, you ruin a good thing. And it's not bad overall. As long as we're trying to conserve and save our industry, I'm all for it. I don't have no problems with it. But sometimes when you make changes, they're not quite for the good. And I feel, too, that maybe sometimes the lawmakers or something should really go out on a boat before they make before they sit there and say, well, we're going to do it this way, and not really have the hands-on experience to say, well, we did it right. You don't know if you did it right until you go out and try it. I know they're doing their best, but experience, no matter what job you're in, that's what helps you make your decisions. Not knowing and making decisions sometimes isn't a good policy.
Let's talk about the business itself. And I'm not going to ask you how much money do you make a year, because you're not going to tell me. But can it be a profitable business?
Yes, it's profitable. You know, it can be profitable. Go along the coast anywhere in the summertime, especially. All the harbors are full of boats. They're working. It's good for the economy overall. And you're taking Washington County, for instance. A lot of people don't have nothing to look forward to but this. I mean, of course, there's wreathing, and there's clamming, there's worming, but they're all seasonable. It's like all the bigger jobs and the higher paying jobs are in that stretch from Bangor to Kittery. So it's a lot of hard work. you can, people make a good living at it, but you know, it's all what you put into it. It's, if you want to put the time, the effort in, it's a good job.
It is a lot of hard work. I will never eat a lobster again without really appreciating where it came from and how much went into catching that lobster. You guys worked so hard today.
Yeah, it's all, you know, a lot of people when they look at a lobster and think, well, they just haul the traps and pick them out. But by the times you mend your gear, put your hog rings in, put your tags, because every trap has to have a tag from the state in it. Times you set them out in the springtime, a lot of fishermen, they fish outside in the springtime. Shorten the warps up, you have to take all your warps off. You have to put shorter ones on, come up in the bay for 3 months or so, take all them warps back off, lug them back outside, and then, of course, take them up at the end. You know, majority of the people take them up, but it's not just looking out across in the summertime and seeing buoys there and saying, wow, that's pretty, and, you know, it's a lot of hard work.
That's Richard Pinkham, and we spent the day fishing with him aboard the Jennifer Diane, and we will be hearing from him to wrap up the show. Richard's got some great final thoughts for us, but before we go there, I want to remind you that if you missed any part of today's broadcast, you can catch rebroadcasts of this program on our sister station, WABI AM 910, Monday through Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. More information about that is available on our website, and also on the website, I have photographs from our day fishing with Richard Pinkham. Go to WVOMFM.com and click on Back to Business. Let's get back to Richard. It is now about 1:30 in the afternoon. Richard began fishing at 4 a.m. So, Richard, how are you going to spend the rest of the day and your evening?
Well, I'm going to go home. I usually cheat a little bit. I'll take a nap or something like that, but there's ropes to be coiled up when I get home. I got a handful of traps. Majority of my traps are in the water now, and just kind of take it easy and wait for the next day.
You're going to be out here again tomorrow morning?
Yes, same time. It's routine. Routine now. You can't haul traps on a Sunday, so that's good. But that law only pertains from June to September. So a lot of people really look forward to Saturday afternoon, because unless you're going to set gear the next day, you know you've pretty much got a day off. Well, a day off from the water. There's always something to do.
One final question, Richard. I was really struck by the camaraderie and the level of support and just genuine affection, if that's the right word, for each other out there. Is it even possible for somebody new to come in and start fishing these waters?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they do, but now there's an apprenticeship program, and it just, you know, they'd have to log so many hours over a two-year period, and then they go on a waiting list, so it's not going to happen right away. There's always possibility, but now you take out here in Dyer's Bay, it's a great bunch of guys to work around. You know, everybody knows everybody, and, you know, things can happen quick out there. So you're better off to have friends, not enemies out there, because you never know. It could be just that split second where you really need some help. And so, no, it's a great bunch of guys. We all have a good time. And, you know, we're all tired and stuff, and you might as well have a good time out there. It's just a great bunch of guys. I'm glad to fish around them.
So if somebody wanted to get into this industry, what is the process, and what advice would you offer them?
Well, the process would be they'd have to get an apprenticeship license and find somebody to sponsor them. They'd have to go on that boat. I don't know the whole terms, but I believe it's 200 days, 1,000 hours. And then once that time is fulfilled, you turn all the paperwork into the state, and then you go on a waiting list. And each part of the state has a different zone, and each zone has their different laws. Some don't have no waiting list. Some have like one-to-one. That means one person has to get done before one person can get in. And this zone, I believe, is 3-to-1. So three people have to give up a license before one person can come in.
Yeah. So it can take some time.
Yeah, it can take a lot of time. And then once they do get in, they can only start out with 300 tags instead of the 800, and then they can increase them each year by 100. So it's a lengthy process.
So you've got to be really serious about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you don't take a serious approach about it, and then you'll find out real quick that it's not going to work.
Well, I really want to thank you, Richard, for allowing me to experience your day, experience a day in the life of Richard Pinkham. Any final words?
I would hope that more people eat lobster, supports our business, supports our industry, and supports people, the working people in the Down East Maine community. So it really helps.
Thank you so much. Have a good rest of the day and a good day fishing tomorrow.
Thank you. I will.
Richard Pinkham. In studio with me is Kathy Billings with the Lobster Institute at the University of Maine. Kathy, any final thoughts or comments based on what we've heard today?
Well, I do want to really make people aware that the lobster industry is a hugely important industry in the state of Maine. We have, including the student and apprentices, you have over 7,400 licensed fishermen out there. It's not just, we think of the one man in the boat, and it's really, there's a whole industry involved. Beyond the fishermen, you have all those ancillary businesses, the dealers, the restaurants, the processors. So it's a huge economic impact. We obviously need to make sure we have a healthy resource to sustain that business end of things. You want to find a balance between the two of those. As Dr. Atchison mentioned, that the health is very important. We've been fortunate in Maine so far. Shell disease that he mentioned is more prevalent in southern New England. It's not quite as prevalent here in Maine. Whether it will be, we don't know. As he mentioned also, there's a lot of things we don't know about that disease. A lot of the work that's been done so far seems to indicate it's not really a contagious disease amongst the lobsters. And so far, there's no known human health impacts. But you have to keep on top of these things. You have to do the research. You have to find the funding to do the research, which is an ongoing challenge. So, as I said, if you want to sustain what's a very valuable economic industry in the state of Maine, these are the kind of things we have to be thinking about.
Very interesting. And if you'd like more information about the Lobster Institute, they have a terrific website, lobsterinstitute.org. And I have a link from the Back to Business website right to your website, Kathy. And you can get there again by going to WVOMFM.com and click on Back to Business. This has been a wonderful show. Very interesting. I want to thank everybody who played a role in putting this together. And I'd love to hear your comments about today's program. Send me an email to backtobusiness@clearchannel.com. Or if you have any suggestions for future shows, send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. I want to thank Richard Pinkham, his son Dennis Pinkham, Corey Falabella, Kathy Billings with the Lobster Institute at UMaine, UMaine Professor James Atchison, and Johnny Shields in Command and Control. We'll be back here next week with a new episode of Back to Business. Don't miss it. Go eat some lobster.